This is the Falcoholic Podcast, the official podcast of the Atlanta Falcons on the SB Nation Podcast Network. I'm Dave Walker, and on today's podcast, we're going to talk about the very first draft class under new general manager Terry Fontenot and head coach Arthur Smith. Joining me are two of the writers at the Falcoholic, Eric Robinson and Adnan Ikic. Eric, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, man. Doing pretty well.
Excellent. And Adnan, how are you?
I'm also doing pretty well, DW. Good to be here.
It's good to have you guys. Appreciate y'all jumping on. And of course, we're going to talk about this draft class. But before we do, I want to talk about maybe what we learned from this draft class. Because, you know, as I mentioned, this is the first one under brand new GM Terry Fontenot, under head coach Arthur Smith. So what are some of the themes that we're taking away from this? Because obviously, you know, these guys don't have a track record. They're not like Dimitroff, where we, you know, we're predicting a trade up in the first round. Even if they were at four, we still would have predicted the trade up. Whether we think we learned about Fontenot and Smith in this draft class, Adnan, I'll go to you here first. What are your takeaways from this draft class?
They value athleticism. They really value athleticism. And on the Falcoholic Live Day 3 special show that we had on Sunday, I can't count the number of times I've said the word RAS, or relative athletic score, which is, for those that don't know, is a statistic that pretty much measures a prospect's height and weight, their physical tools versus what they did at the combine, a number of workouts they did at the combine. And it pops out one number out of 10, which pretty much translates to what their athleticism is. And on day three, especially, you had Drew Dahlman, who was in the 99th percentile with a 9.9 RAS score. You had Taequann Graham, who graded out at a 9.68 RAS score, which was, I think, fourth among all defensive linemen. Darren Hall was above an 8. Kyle Pitts, we already know, is a freak of nature. but everyone, especially on day three, those early day three picks, I was popping out. I was looking at that RAS with wide eyes, just because I know that that is a strategy that the New Orleans Saints have been employing the past few years. Nick Underhill for the Saints, one of their really good journalists, he discovered it. And he wrote an article about how the Saints have targeted exclusively players with, I think, a 9.5 or above RAS score in the first round in the last few years. And some of those players have been considered to be reaches, but it shows just how valuable that statistic is for the New Orleans Saints, knowing that Terry Fontenot came from their scheme. It's not a silver bullet like, you know, some players, Jalen Mayfield. When he measures out as a guard, his RAS score is a 7.2, which is still very good, very solid. Adekunbo Ogundeji, whose name I'm going to have to really work on pronouncing, is a below 7. But it's definitely something that I'll be looking out for in the next few years, especially on day three, seeing if there will be a trend behind getting some of these high athletic, high ceiling type players. But, you know, right now it's everyone had a very, very solid RAS score in this entire draft class that they've taken. Everyone's at least around a 6 or above, and everyone but Frank Darby is around a 7.0 or above.
Interesting. Very interesting. Eric, same question to you. When you look at this draft class, what is one of your main takeaways about the philosophy that Fontenot is bringing to the Falcons?
You know, it's interesting you bring this question up, because we mentioned it. We talked about this a little bit on day three, and it's something that I think fans should definitely take note of early on to help you at least approach these drafts under this new regime. One thing for sure, that I know, you know, just looking at the surface, that they have an interest in the Senior Bowl, of course, because four of their nine draft picks were from the Senior Bowl. And, you know, I'm definitely not going to take the shine of Adnan. He brings up a very good component, which is the RAS score. A lot of fans are probably not familiar with it, but they probably will be over the next, you know, couple of years, because I'm pretty sure We're going to talk about this a lot, but I do agree with Adnan that that is a component that I think fans should definitely take a look at. It measures a lot, just like you mentioned, as far as the athleticism goes.
Yep.
And it takes a lot of elements to put together to come up with a score such as that. I think another thing, especially from the skill positions, or the, you know, maybe not necessarily the trenches, but you know, you look at the skill position guys like Pitts, like Darby, you even go to the cornerback room, go to the secondary room. I think they're definitely going to place a lot of emphasis on playmaking ability. These guys that they picked, especially in the secondary with Richie Grant, Darren Hall, they're known for their ball skills. They're known for their playmaking ability. These are not guys that you can just, from the previous tenure, I don't think they really place much of an emphasis on it, which is why there was a lack of turnovers
right
on the defensive side of the ball. I think that's going to change now with these two guys. These guys are known natural playmakers on the back end. And especially when, again, the skill position players on offense with Pitts, even going to the undrafted free agency pool with Javion Hawkins and Frank Darby as well. These guys are known for huge plays. Hawkins had 3 plays last year of 70-yard touchdown runs or more. And 2 years ago, Darby posted, I think he had about 900 yards on just 31 catches. I think he averaged like 20 yards a catch 2 years ago. So, again, these guys are known for their playmaking ability. I think that's another element that you're going to look at. I don't think they're going to be taking many projects as well like their previous regime. Players is going to need 2 years or so until we actually see something from them.
Interesting. Yeah, one of the main takeaways for me is competition and versatility. They are coming in, and there's no position that's safe right now, especially on the offensive line. I think many of us going into this year figured, okay, you know, Hennessy, you know, his rookie year, he obviously was rough, but it was rough for most rookies in 2020 because of the pandemic and everything that happened with the lack of camps, the lack of preseason games for these guys to sort of get their legs under them. And we all sort of figured, okay, Hennessy's probably the front runner. I don't think we could say that. You look at what the Falcons did in this draft class. I think it's pretty clear that everyone is on notice. The Hennessy is not assured a position as a starter on this offensive line. And some of that's to be expected. But the big thing is, especially on the offensive line and the defensive line, the versatility that they're also looking for as well. They, you know, Jalen Mayfield is being projected as both offensive tackle and really will probably compete more for offensive guard in his first year. Drew Dahlman, again, interior center guard, someone that they project could move around on the inside of the offensive line. And we heard that word a lot from Fontenot and Smith during the press conferences, versatility. And I think especially for the guys that want to earn a spot on the active roster on Sundays, that is going to be critical. They're going to want guys that can fill multiple roles. And this draft class is sort of the first step in that direction. So with that, let's talk about the players that the Falcons grabbed. Obviously, this draft class went a little bit different, I think, than many fans were thinking. Obviously, the first 3 picks of the class were all quarterbacks. The only surprise, maybe remotely, is the fact that Mac Jones did not go number 3 to San Francisco. The 49ers did indeed take Trey Lance, who many people thought was...
I was definitely wondering if they were still going to go that route or not. Like, yeah. I really was. While they were on the clock, I was questioning that.
I tell you, we were having debates in our own chat about that, about whether Kyle Shanahan was that crazy. And
he was just having fun with it the entire time. He was
probably so.
He probably was. Yeah. That is NFL draft smoke for you. But the Falcons, instead of making it 4 straight quarterbacks, they stayed at 4 and they took the top non-quarterback prospect on the board. Arguably one of the most athletic prospects to come out at this position in NFL history, at least if you look at what he has done in college and his measurables. Of course, we were talking about tight end Kyle Pitts out of the University of Florida. So Eric, I'm going to go to you here first. You and I have, as all of the writers did at the Falcoholic, we went back and forth, talked about going quarterback versus going you know, with Kyle Pitts versus trying to trade back. And it looks like they went this option. They're sort of doubling down on the idea that, you know, they can compete immediately with Matt Ryan at quarterback. So what are your thoughts on Kyle Pitts, how he fits in, and what you like or don't like about him?
For the past few months, I think those who follow me frequently on Twitter, they know that I was never truly an individual that wanted them to take a quarterback, but I've always felt that they possibly were going to go that route, that it was an actual possibility. There were some mm-hmm. fans who just couldn't swallow that pill for some odd reason, but this team was really interested in taking a guy if he was there. Possibly Trey Lance, if he was there, I think that decision, you know, definitely would have came. It really would have came down to those two guys. But mm-hmm. I can't be upset about Kyle Pitts. It's kind of hard to say, man, they didn't go quarterback. They failed. They took arguably the best player in the draft on the board for some teams. How can you complain about that? Yeah. It's this guy is a freak of nature. 6'6", 240, runs a 4.4, should have been a 4.3, but he didn't run in a straight line in his 40. And if he did, it would have been even more impressive. this kid is, again, man, I don't know if the casual fan is going to understand what he's going to do just being on the field, not even throwing passes his way, just him being in uniform on the field. Yep. Is going to scare defenses. It's going to create a lot more one-on-ones for Julio. It's going to create a lot more one-on-ones for Calvin Ridley. It's going to create some run lanes for Mike Davis. It's even going to have the fourth or fifth best defender on defense covering a guy like Hayden Hurst, who also runs a 4-4 at tight end. Matter of fact, it's going to create matchup issues. Probably going to have some poor linebacker trying to cover Russell Gage in the slot. The fact that he's on the field is going to open up this offense. You add in the element of a creative play caller like Arthur Smith, and get ready, fans, because every Sunday is going to be a hell of a game. I promise you, they're going to put up points. Now, whether they slow down teams, I don't know. We'll see. But they'll be damn sure entertaining on offense.
Oh, I cannot wait. Adnan, your thoughts on Kyle Pitts?
Well, not only is it everything that Eric said regarding just how physically incredible he is, but just to add to that, his wingspan measured in at 83 3/8, which is longer than any wide receiver or tight end in the NFL over the last 20 years.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the previous longest was DK Metcalf, and this is a statistic from CBS Sports, and his was 82 7/8 inches. So you got him beat by about half an inch or so.
And he's about as big as DK Metcalf, right?
No, absolutely.
Same size, right? Well, okay.
Yeah, same size, and like you said, should have run a 4.3 40. Like, Kyle Pitts is the type of dude where if you dropped him into Salem in the 18th century, he'd be burned at the stake for being a witch.
I love it. I love it.
He is an absolute unicorn. A player should not be able to move that quickly at his size. You know, the name that gets thrown around is Calvin Johnson, and I'm not ready to coronate him as the next Calvin Johnson.
Right. But,
you know, you can definitely – the comparisons pop off, you know, when you see it on film. You can definitely see the comparison. He moves with such – one thing that really caught my eye in the SEC at Florida last year, just how fluid his movements are, especially mm-hmm. at that size, especially at that speed. And, I mean, he was all production. He didn't drop a single pass last year despite taking passes from Kyle Trask, who, you know, in all honesty, I don't think is a very good quarterback. He got Kyle Trask. He's the reason Kyle Trask went in the second round. If Kyle Pitts wasn't on that team, Kyle Trask, I think, goes probably undrafted. And maybe that's an exaggeration, but he definitely doesn't go as high as the second round.
No, he's heading to Canada right now.
Yeah.
But
nice.
Kyle Pitts, like Eric said, it's going to be a show. I also was on team quarterback. I wanted the Falcons to shore up the future, but you really can't get mad at drafting a unicorn type prospect who is the best tight end prospect I've ever seen coming out of college. And the matchup nightmares are going to be real, because I guarantee you every single defensive coordinator in the NFC South absolutely shuddered after the Falcons made that selection, because now you have to guard Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Kyle Pitts. Arthur Smith is going to be able to move him around anywhere. Kyle Pitts is going to line up in the slot as a slot receiver for a number of plays. He'll move Julio Jones on the inside to exploit some matchups. It's not going to be like Dirk Cutter, where it's just going to be the same thing, pounding your head against the table, play in and play out. It's going to be very creative. Arthur Smith is incredibly analytical. It's going to be a lot of pre-snap motion, a lot of play action, and he is going to exploit the matchups. And Matt Ryan, I don't think anyone is happier than Matt Ryan was at the end of draft night on night one in the NFL. I think Matt Ryan was smiling from ear to ear.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Everything you guys said and more. I had fallen in love with the idea of Kyle Pitts being the guy instead of a quarterback a few weeks back. And for this reason, in 3-4 years, let's say 4 years from now, you ride Matt Ryan out, you add an extra year or two to his contract. And in 4 years, you then move on to your next quarterback. Let's say it's a developmental guy, or you somehow get one of those top guys in the draft. Kyle Pitts is 20 years old right now. You will be handing that rookie quarterback at that point a veteran 24, 25-year-old tight end who will help ease him into the league. Talk about a safety blanket for a young quarterback. So if even though you're not getting the quarterback now, if you do get one in 2, 3, 4 years, having Kyle Pitts for him to be able to lean on is such an incredible handoff. And, you know, obviously we are projecting like crazy that Kyle Pitts is going to be a great tight end in this league. And I think when you draft a tight end at number four, it is because you were expecting him to become a great tight end in this league. But I do find it interesting that all the comparisons people are making to Kyle Pitts are to wide receivers. They're not to, you know, tight ends. They're not comparing him to Tony Gonzalez. They're not comparing him to Rob Gronkowski. We're hearing names like Calvin Johnson and DK Metcalf and Julio Jones, because he is going to force defense coordinators to make bets on every single play. You see him in there, if you put a corner in there to cover him because you need that speed because of his top end speed, and it's a running play, you're now undersized for that running play. You put a safety or a linebacker on him, he'll blow past them. Like, he literally is going to cause nightmares for defensive coordinators.
Think about this, DW. It's 3rd and 7. All right. The Falcons are in midfield. They need a touchdown. All right. 3rd and 7. 2x2. You got Julio at X. You got Pitts on the inside of him. You got Ridley at Z. You got Hurst on the inside of him.
Mm-hmm.
Shotgun. Guess who's flanking Matt Ryan? Cordarrelle Patterson. What do you do?
Yeah.
What coverage do you run? You want to run man? You want to run man across the board? All right. You're giving one-on-ones to Julio, Pitts, Ridley, Hurst, and some poor middle linebacker's got to cover a Swiss Army knife in Cordarrelle Patterson. Okay. You're going to run cover two? All right. The seams are there for Pitts and Hurst on the inside. Good luck, man.
You will literally have to have elite level players at every single position in the secondary and linebacker.
It's going to make defenses change up. So, like, you're probably on third down, you're probably going to end up putting more dime packages on the field than you want to against the Falcons because of that, to try your hardest to match up against them across the board. It's going to force some, you may end up forcing teams to rush three linemen more than they actually want to, because they have to drop eight back in coverage.
Yeah.
It's going to change up a lot.
Yeah. And you know, his reach, his catch radius is ridiculous. This guy catches, you know, as Adnan was saying, everything thrown in his direction. Did not drop a single pass all of last year. You have to go back to his sophomore year to find that time, the last time he actually dropped a pass. He's only 20 years old. He'll turn 21 during the season. I love this pick. I think this is the kind of player that fans will be buying his jersey in mass numbers in 2 or 3 years.
And yeah, that number eight jersey is going to be, it's going to be going like hotcakes this
year. Oh yeah. Yeah. I think it's already started. And I think in 5 years, he is going to be a marquee name in the NFL, a name that you're going to see on the biggest banners because he's going to be that kind of player. And that's what, you know, we're projecting as everyone is, but yeah.
There's analysts who've already said he's a top five tight end right now. And he hasn't even caught a pass.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go that far, but that
goes to show the skill set along with what the league sees at tight end. There's not a lot of tight ends in the league that can even compare to what he is getting ready to bring to the table. And you already have analysts that are saying this guy is already in the upper echelon. He hasn't even caught a pass yet.
Yeah.
So in that 4 year span that you pointed out, DW, you're probably talking about possibly the best tight end in the league at that point.
Yeah. And you know, you look at tight end production with the Travis Kelce's, the guys who, you know, really dominate at the top, where they're getting between 800 and 1,000 yards receiving. It is not unreasonable to think that Pitts could be well past that on average in a couple of years, where he's getting wide receiver-esque yardage numbers because his, again, I think the comparisons for him are better against wide receivers because of what he can do. If you watch his tape from Florida, and I watched, you know, a collection of clips, this guy runs away from safeties and corners. They don't catch him. And Eric, I think to your point, his 40 time being listed as 4.4 does not feel like that's fast enough. This guy was blowing the doors off of guys. So I feel like, to your point, it realistically is probably below 4.4.
So let me ask you guys a real quick question before we move on to the next player. Rookie season, year one. What is if he doesn't get 800 yards this year, is that a disappointing season for him?
I don't think so because, you know, Julio Jones, I think, had under 900 his rookie year.
Yeah. Julio Jones also battled a lot of injuries too his rookie year, but, I mean – fully healthy, it's not disappointing because 800 yards for a tight end is still it's still a very, you know, very good number. Not a lot of tight ends can get you 1,000 yards in a given season. I think about three in the NFL
but we're talking a top five tight end.
Yeah,
a top five tight end
that was taken fourth overall.
Yeah,
highest drafted tight end ever.
I think the difference here is he's going to your point, what you were just describing here, he's going to be on the same field with Calvin Ridley, Julio Jones. Like if he gets over 1,000 yards, Matt Ryan may literally break 6,000 yards passing in 2021.
And it does depend on the rest of the team's success, because if the Falcons are winning 11, 12 games and Julio Jones is going off, Calvin Ridley is getting a career high in yardage,
right,
and Kyle Pitts has 700 receiving yards and double-digit touchdowns, and that's an absolutely successful season.
Right. I agree. I mean, I don't think he has to get 1,000 yards. I don't think he has to crack 900 yards. But if
remember, Tony Gonzalez in his entire career in Atlanta never reached 1,000 receiving yards.
Right.
And he was a Pro Bowler four times, an All-Pro one time.
If he gets 700, 800, maybe, you know, 8 or 9 touchdowns, the team's putting up 35, 38 points per game, they're winning games, they're, you know, embarrassing defenses, I'm fine with that. Now, a casual fan may not be, but I'm fine. Yeah. I'll take it.
And, I
just wanted to make a quick point. Like, it may not seem fair, the expectations that we're putting on Kyle Pitts' shoulders of, you know, we have to start getting him fitted for a gold jacket right away.
Right, right.
But it comes with the territory of being the highest drafted tight end in NFL history.
And frankly, just being a top five pick, period.
Yeah, being a top five pick and being a pick where the Falcons probably could have gotten a lot in a trade back. And the opportunity cost, that's a lot of opportunity cost given away to take Kyle Pitts. So, yes, I fully expect him to be a perennial Pro Bowler, a perennial All-Pro. Maybe not right away in his first year because, you know, he's still a 20-year-old rookie. But over time, I'm definitely expecting – minimum Darren Waller production.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm also ready for him to embarrass the Saints defense, thanks to Cam Jordan's comments.
Yeah.
Cam Jordan really thinks that DeMario Davis can cover him one-on-one.
Yeah, good luck with that, Cam. I don't know. There's a linebacker or safety in this league that's going to cover him one-on-one successfully.
The only one that can come that comes to mind possibly is Levante David.
Yeah.
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 But even then, again, 6'6", massive catch radius. There were times, you guys remember the Tony Gonzalez years, where Matt Ryan, he had that trust in him. Gonzalez could be covered, and he still threw it to him knowing that Gonzo would come down with the ball. I want to see if Ryan and Pitts can develop that kind of connection. That takes a little bit of time, but that is something that I don't think we can underestimate either.
I definitely like to hear some reports this offseason of him and Matt Ryan working out outside of training camp, the way Austin Hooper and Matt Ryan used to a few years ago. And, you know, just getting that repertoire in.
I will be shocked if it doesn't happen at this point, knowing our quarterback, knowing, you know, like you guys said, he was probably thrilled to see that the first pick was Pitts and not one of the quarterbacks. I imagine Matt Ryan has probably already booked the flight and made sure that he's going to get together with his newest weapon.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Ryan's making $23 million this year. Fly him out.
Yeah, fly him out.
Buy him
first class.
Fly him out and get some work in.
Yep. All right. We could go on, I feel like, forever on Kyle Pitts. This is he has the potential to make the Falcons a fun team to watch again, just by himself. Let's talk about the second round pick. Eric, you wrote about him, and in fact, you wrote so well about him that NFL GM stole your words from you.
Former NFL GMs.
Anyhow, that's a different story for a different time. We will not recap that on this podcast. But with that second round pick, the Falcons took safety Richie Grant out of University of Central Florida. I know you were actually pretty excited about this one. I think a lot of people were a little confused because there was another safety on the board who they thought the Falcons should take maybe ahead of Grant, but you disagreed, and I'd love to get your take on why. What is it about Richie Grant that makes you think this was a good pick for the Falcons in round two?
After watching him at the Senior Bowl and watching, you know, some tape on him, I thought he was the best safety in the draft. I thought for sure he had the best instincts of any safety in the draft, just that one aspect alone. Now, granted, Trayvon Morig is probably the better overall athlete, sure. But I've seen Richie Grant for 2 years or so be that playmaker on that UCF defense. You know, Trayvon Morig is just now coming into his own a little bit for the TCU, for the TCU Horned Frogs last year. So the thing about Richie that I like the most, of course, the playmaking ability, as I mentioned earlier, the fact that you can put him back there, you're playing in the DNP's defense where you're going to see a lot of deep center field safety covering, center field safety. And he can do that in a bit. He can really do that. He can do a lot of things. He can play deep center field. He can play the slot. He played the boundary. He got some reps at boundary corner at the Senior Bowl. And one of the reps that he had was one-on-one against Kadarius Toney out of Florida, played off man coverage, undercut Toney, got a pick in the red zone. That goes to show you how valuable this guy is. Now he's probably going to play mostly safety, but if you need in a versatile defense like this, where there's a lot of interchangeable parts, there's a lot of guys moving in different places, there's going to be some plays where, you know what, Richie, I need you to play slot here while Harmon takes the center field, and I got Eric Harris roaming the intermediate level. That's what I need you to do. Like, he's going to be able to do that for you. And I don't think that's what Morig brought to the table. Again, the athleticism was there, but I don't think you can really ask him to cover certain positions or play certain positions at any given time. But, again, the playmaking ability for Richie Grant, the ball skills is there. The one thing I do want to see him clean up at the next level, he does take questionable angles, and it leads to big plays behind him. But that is something that you can teach. You can clean that up at the next level. What you can't teach is the fact that this guy – there's one play in particular. I think they were playing South Florida. He had a play where he was playing center field, third down, X receiver ran a go route. He made a break on the ball and covered 30 yards. And he made a break on the ball before the quarterback even you know, pulled the trigger. And by the time he pulled the trigger, Richie had already covered 15 yards. That's the instincts, the anticipation. He knew that pass was coming. He didn't hesitate. He didn't second guess. He made a move, and it paid off. Wow. It's something the Falcons have lacked on the back end in years. And I think he's going to definitely bring that and help that defense out a lot in that respect.
Adnan, your thoughts on Richie Grant with that second round pick?
Yeah, I mean, Richie Grant, this is a name over the past few months on the Falcolic Live show, other than Kyle Pitts and the quarterbacks, you know, obviously at the very top. Richie Grant is maybe the name we mentioned the most as a potential day two pick when looking at the safeties. And yeah, he's someone who is incredibly smart when it comes to play recognition. He has the instincts you would kill for to have in your safety. Very good playmaker, like Eric said. The Falcons have been lacking playmaking in the secondary. They were lacking it last year. They lacked it a couple of years ago. That player who can really go out there and get that game-changing turnover. And when rebuilding the secondary, it looks like they've really made a concentrated effort to bring in those playmakers, as evidenced with the Darren Hall pick also in the fourth round. Yeah, Richie Grant's also he's also a pretty good run defender. You know, PFF graded him out very favorably as on run defense. I mean, he's not known for being like, you know, Keanu Neal out there in the secondary with his tackling, but you know, he can definitely get his hands dirty when it comes to that aspect of the game. And yeah, very, very versatile player, someone who Dean Pease is going to really love using. And, you know, no doubt in my mind, this is a Dean Pease pick in the second round. He had a lot of input with it. And with Trayvon Moore, don't forget, he did fall down draft boards, but don't forget, that's because he has a lingering back issue.
Right.
And that's the reason why he fell as far as he did. So, you know, that's something where you would kind of be holding your breath if Morg was in the secondary whenever there was a collision.
Yeah, very good point. I forgot about that. One last thing on Richie Grant. Dane Brugler, who used to write for SB Nation, is now one of the draft writers for The Athletic. He also had Richie Grant as his top safety on the board, along with Eric Robinson. He loved this pick as well. Thought it was good value for the Falcons. Got him. Yeah.
Emory Hunt of CBS Sports also had him as his best safety in the draft as well. So it was a pretty relative consensus when it comes to how highly thought of Richie Grant was coming into the draft, even with him being a second round pick.
Yep, absolutely. All right, third round pick. Before we go to our break and talk about the day three picks. Offensive lineman Jalen Mayfield out of Michigan. What's interesting about this guy, again, another really young player. I believe he is also just 20 years old, similar to Kyle Pitts. Only 15 total games played. His 2020 season did end early because of an injury, but he is a player that I think many people were sort of scratching their head when his name came up. Maybe this in this draft class, he's the first name you're thinking, all right, we're going to have to see what the coaching staff does with this guy. So Adnan, I want to get your thoughts first on Mayfield, how he projects and what your thoughts are on the pick.
I mean, Jalen Mayfield, you're talking about a guy who many had projected in the second round. So I think this was one of those BPA type scenarios where he was possibly the best player available on Terry Fontenot's board. And another player, you mentioned it earlier, a lot of versatility. He was an offensive tackle at Michigan, and in the Big 12, he went up against many, many top tier pass rushers. You know, Ettore Gross-Matos, Chase Young, and you know, he held his own for the most part. He had a very good season last year. He's someone who I think will be competing for the left guard spot this season. He projects, when I mentioned the RAS score, as a tackle, he was pretty poor. He was in less than 5.0. But as a guard, he projects above a 7.0. He was a 4.91 as a tackle. And he's someone whom I think will be able to compete for that left guard position, just because it's not really secure. We're talking about right now, Matt Gono, I think, would be the starter, and he really didn't showcase himself as someone who was very good at left guard last
right.
year. I was looking for
that's generous.
Another adjective, but yeah, he just wasn't very good last year. And, you know, maybe Mayfield isn't a pristine guard right away from day one, but he's definitely going to have an opportunity to compete and fight for that position. He's someone who also, I think in the future, maybe someone whom the Falcons can look at in that right tackle position if Caleb McGarry doesn't improve. And if Caleb McGarry doesn't live up to that first round billing, because right now it's no guarantee that McGarry is going to have that fifth year option picked up. He's 2 years in, he was an absolute train wreck disaster in his rookie season, gave up the most sacks in the NFL. Last year, yep. he was better, but that's not saying much. Definitely, I think there's some names that are being put on notice on the Falcons active roster, like you mentioned. It's not just Matt Hennessy. I think Caleb McGarry also,
good point.
You know, this is maybe a bit of a warning shot to him to, you know, kind of improve, get his act together a little bit at right tackle, because, you know, just because you're a first round pick with a former regime, that doesn't mean that you have this ironclad job security.
Great, great point. Eric, your thoughts on Jalen Mayfield and how he projects?
It's funny you bring that up, Adnan, because while it does address possibly the future at right tackle, I honestly believe that Mayfield is a guard at the next level. And the few things that I saw on tape, and granted, going back to his playing time at Michigan, he did have, you know, a carousel of elite athletes to defend at edge rusher. But from the footwork aspect, that right there alone tells me that I'm not quite sure if he can be able to be a permanent starter at right tackle, because McGarry also has footwork issues. And Mayfield doesn't have the greatest length. Well, McGarry doesn't have the greatest length also. So I'm not, now granted, these are teachable. These are traits that can be polished and you can improve on at the next level with proper coaching. But I think right now, the way he's graded out, you take that RAS score that we mentioned earlier, the way he's graded out, I think he's probably better suited at guard than right tackle, in my opinion. And I think that's what we're going to see from him. Now, I will say this, I'm not expecting a whole lot from him in year one. I think 2022 is when you're going to see a more refined, ready to go Jalen Mayfield. It's probably going to be a starter at left guard. I will say this also, his presence helps the run game. This guy's a road grader. This guy's finished blocks. I would not be surprised if throughout Jalen Mayfield's career, he gets some penalties because he's blocking past the whistle. He's that type of blocker. And again, the Falcons kind of sort of need that, because let's just be quite honest, they're a little soft on the offensive line the past yep. few years.
Now, they've been soft on the offensive line since 2013. But
right.
I just want to make a point. I think the ideal plan is for McGarry to work out at right tackle and for him to be the left guard of the future. For
yeah.
Mayfield to slot in and to be that great left guard moving forward. But, you know, I'm just saying, just in case it doesn't happen, then you have that contingency plan in your back pocket.
At the very least, it probably scares McGarry a little bit. I'm with you on that. At the very least, you know, Mayfield just kind of looking over his shoulder during meetings and stuff like that, it probably reminds McGarry, like, your job isn't safe.
Yeah.
Which we may see better play out of it because of it. But, again, I think Mayfield is going to transition to guard. And, again, I think his presence on the interior right now, he's a better run blocker than he is pass protector. And, again, I think he is really going to help that aspect out alone. He's going to give him some attitude, which this team desperately needs. And I like it. At 68th overall, Daniel Jeremiah had him ranked as a top 25 player.
Yeah. Yep.
So that goes to show you how highly thought of he was as well. And to get him at 68, excellent value.
Yeah. And I think Anand, you said it. This feels like a BPA pick based on, you know, several boards and most importantly, based on Fontenot's board. So we'll certainly see how this plays out. He'll be a name we'll definitely be watching in camp to see how he comes along. So before we talk about the guys they picked up on day three, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're back on the Falcoholic Podcast. This is David Walker. I am joined by my fellow Falcoholic writers, Eric Robinson and Adnan Ikic. We're talking about the Falcons draft class. We talked about days one and two in the first half. We're going to finish up by talking about day three, the fourth, fifth, and sixth round, where the Falcons had six additional picks. And incidentally, I failed to mention this in the first half, but the second round pick, Richie Grant, was actually after the Falcons had traded back. They traded back with the Denver Broncos. Eric, you and I had talked about that multiple times. We felt like a trade in the second round was more likely than the trade in the first round. And of course, that ended up materializing. Mm-hmm. And that ended up giving the Falcons an additional fourth round pick, which we will talk about here in just a second. So let's do that. Let's jump right into day three. The first of their two picks in the fourth round, their original fourth round pick, they took cornerback Darren Hall out of San Diego State. So, Eric, I'm going to go to you here first on this one. What are your thoughts on Darren Hall picking him up in the fourth round?
Darren Hall was the one player that I mocked on my last mock draft at the Falcons.
Really?
Yeah. I had him going in the fifth, but I felt like he was a player for them for, you know, from the start. Playmaker, again, at corner. You go back and you look at his tape, you look at his numbers, his production, the guy was always around the ball. He is such a natural when it comes to making plays on the ball. And I tweeted out about it earlier today, and don't take it and run with it. He does remind me a little bit of Robert Alford, but in terms of just the athleticism and the frame, he's not as handsy, he's not as grabby as Robert Alford was, that is for sure. So you can breathe a little sigh of relief there. He's not going to be that type of player at the next level. But the ball skills, the production is there. This guy can play man. He can play zone. And to be quite honest with you, I wouldn't want him playing it all the time. But he can give a couple plays or two a game at the slot position, depending on who the matchup is. But you want his playmaking ability on the field. And again, we brought this up on day three as well. Because of the type of defense that DNPs is going to have, they're going to blitz. They're going to be physical. They're going to get after the quarterback up front. So what you need on that back end, you need guys that are able to make a play when the ball is in the air. Because what you're going to see now with this defense, you're probably going to see some batted passes, some errant throws, some overthrows, some rush throws. So you need those defenders that are on that back end that are ready to turn into receivers when the ball is in the air. And that's what they got with Darren Hall and Richie Grant.
Love it. Adnan, your thoughts on Darren Hall?
Speaking of making plays, Darren Hall led the FBS with 16 pass breakups this past season. He's someone who gets into the right place at the right time. Someone who will absolutely compete on those 50-50 balls. And, I mentioned it with Richie Grant, and we talked about it many times, just about the team not having those playmakers in the secondary last year and just how much of a hindrance it was when, you know, how many times did it happen last season where, you know, you're thinking, man, if the defense can make one play, if the secondary can get one interception, we'll be so much better for it. We'll have such a better opportunity. We'll have, we just need this momentum swinging play that just never happened. The only time I remember it happening was in that Carolina game with Bleedy Ray Wilson, of all people, getting that big interception to close the game out. Well, the Falcons are building it up with the secondary right now. You have A.J. Terrell, and you're adding to him with Darren Hall. You're adding to him with Richie Grant. Absolutely. He's someone who will go out there and, you know, I wish I could articulate this better. I wish I could be more eloquent than just saying that he's going to go out there and he's going to make a play for you. But, you know, simplicity is the greatest sophistication with this, and there's no better way of putting it. He's someone who's incredibly versatile. He's very physical, also a very good run defender. And this is something that I'm noticing you know, in a trend with both Grant and Hall. You know, they want guys who can go out there and who can, you know, get their hands dirty, who can stop, who can get a nice tackle, who will help in the run game. You know, these are players with layers to their games. It's not just one dimension. So, you know, a very physical guy. He's 5'11", 188 pounds, a good size, and an RAS score of above 8. So I'm very excited about the future for Darren Hall. I definitely think he has a future as the second cornerback opposite on the opposite field, on the opposite end of the field than AJ Terrell. This, I think, is a future starter for the Falcons.
Excellent. Great value there. So continuing our talk on fourth round picks, the pick that they got from the Denver Broncos for moving back in the second round was offensive guard slash center Drew Dahlman out of Stanford. Adnan, you talked a little bit about him earlier in his RAS score. So what is it that fans should know about this guy, and why are you excited about the Falcons picking him up in the fourth round?
Well, the only offensive lineman, I think, who had a higher RAS score than Drew Dahlman was Creed Humphrey, who went, I think, in the second round. And Creed Humphrey's RAS score was a 10.0. He was absolutely like,
holy cow.
Like, yeah, absolutely otherworldly, like 100th percentile. But yeah, Drew Dahlman, I think, is someone. He needs to build up his strength a little bit. He needs to get a bit heavier. He's under 300 pounds. And I think that's the one saving grace for Matt Hennessy. The fact that Drew Dahlman physically needs to get a bit bigger before the team will probably be comfortable making him the everyday starting center. But definitely someone with some good technique, someone with some good footwork. He's constantly looking for someone to block. He's never going to be idle. If he doesn't have someone coming right at him, he's going to find someone. He's going to be able to help out his fellow offensive linemen. He has good bend, and definitely Matt Hennessy isn't secure. Matt Hennessy had a very rough rookie season. I think his PFF pass blocking grade was something horrendous, like a 28 point something.
Yeah, it was bad.
He had an opportunity as the starting left guard, but he was so bad in that position that he was benched effectively. And when he did get his opportunity at center, when Alex Mack was injured, he really didn't do anything to stand out. So I think Hennessy has, you know, he has one more year to really prove himself. And if not, Drew Dahlman is waiting in the shadows. I think this is more of a 2022 pick, but definitely the athleticism is something that completely jumps out at you. In a 9.9 RAS score, that's 99th percentile. He's someone with a high ceiling because of that. It's just he's not ready. He probably won't be ready from day one.
Yeah, but definitely love the athleticism here. Let's move on to the fifth round pick. Eric, I want to get your take on the defensive lineman out of Texas with the first of three fifth round picks for the Falcons. They took Taquan Graham out of the University of Texas. So your thoughts on how he projects and what you think he may do for this Falcons defense?
He's definitely going to project as a likely five tech defensive end for this defense. And I early on, I don't expect him to really be I definitely don't expect him to be a starter. He could definitely play himself into a rotational role this year.
Right.
But again, he is another athletic specimen at defensive tackle. I think he's roughly a little bit north of 300 pounds. I think he's like 6'3", 6'4". I don't have his numbers right here in front of me, but I will pull them up for you.
Just under 300. He was at 292.
292. Okay. Well, yeah. He's definitely probably going to be around 300 once the Falcons start playing this year. But yeah, he's another athletic guy. Really quick get off. Able played a lot of three tech, of course, at Texas in their 4-3 scheme. But the one thing about him, the inconsistency. You know, he may have a few plays in a certain game where he's looking like, man, he looks unblockable. And there are some games where you didn't even know he was playing. You thought he was injured, but he's out there. He's just not really making a play. That is what you get out of Taquan Graham at this point. Again, athletic guy, almost 35-inch arms, which is impressive. Hands are baseball mitts. But again, he has the raw intangibles that you look for a fifth rounder. Now yeah. You just need that right seasoning, which is the coaching. Now you need that Dean Pease, you need that Jess Simpson to say, hey, this is what we need to work on. We're going to coach you up. You're going to be a player going forward. So that's what they're going to get out of Taquan Graham. And I think he can, again, just the raw athleticism alone, I think he can definitely play himself into a rotational role this year. And I would not be surprised, honestly, if he's pushing for a starting spot in 2022.
Yeah, and I think the one thing they mentioned about him that you just highlighted was the length. This guy's got long arms, and which is something that in the past the Falcons didn't put a lot of emphasis on, and it seems like something that they're leaning back towards now under this new regime, which is good to see because I think we've seen throughout the years that the guys who are on the front line, they have to have that length. They, you know, yeah. There are exceptions. If you've got a Grady Jarrett, even though he's shorter, but Grady Jarrett is sort of a freak of nature not someone that should be your consistent draft profile for right. someone that you're looking for to bring down the quarterback from the interior.
One thing that he does well that I also love and I think it goes unappreciated from defensive linemen, man, he knows how to use his hands. And that is one trait that I absolutely love from defensive linemen. It's one of the first things I look for because you can have the strength, you can have the leg drive, but if you don't know how to use your hands, you're not going to go anywhere, if we're being quite honest. You're going to be one-dimensional as a pass rusher, but he knows how to use his hands. He knows how to get inside of a offensive lineman's frame, and he knows how to win as well, leverage with that particular aspect. So that's what I like about him.
Yeah. All right. With the second pick in the fifth round, again, of three the Falcons had in this round, they took defensive end out of Notre Dame, Adetokunbo Ogundeji.
You got it.
So
no, I'm not going to try it.
So, we're going to have to ask him for a nickname when it comes time. In the same way that Foyer gave us, Aluokun gave us Foyer to use instead.
I think a day is like a shortened first name for him, like ADE. I've seen that shortened a lot for him.
So yeah, I'm definitely willing to learn it. I'm definitely, it's a beautiful name. You know, it's a wonderful name. I'm definitely willing to.
Oh, absolutely.
That's his preference.
It's an even better name when he's bringing out quarterbacks. That's what absolutely. You really want to call it. Yeah.
Yes.
And yeah. If he doesn't want to go the nickname route, I will definitely learn it and I will call him.
100%.
Adetokunbo
Ogundeji.
Adetokunbo Ogundeji.
It will eventually roll off the tongue.
It will eventually roll off the tongue. Yes.
The more plays he makes, the more it will roll off the tongue, too.
Yes. So, Adnan, you've been practicing his name. Why don't you tell us a little bit about this player and why you think he's going to be a decent fit in what Dean Pease wants to do?
I think he can play both the 4-3 and the 3-4. And we know just how valued that is in a Dean Pease defense. Dean Pease does not box himself into one specific scheme. He will throw different looks at opposing offenses. And one thing that I really like about Dean Pease's philosophy is he adjusts his defense to his player's strengths, as opposed to, you know, what we saw, for example, with Dan Quinn, which was, you know, we're going to run this specific defense. And when we run this specific defense, this cover two rushing four, we need to bring in players who will adjust to the scheme as opposed to the other way around. And as a result, it's kind of impossible to go very much BPA with defense because of that. But Ogundeji will, you know, he's someone who he's a very good size. 260 pounds, over 6 foot four, has very long arms. He led Notre Dame with 7 sacks last year. And another player who is a pretty good playmaker as well. He forced some turnovers, forced 3 fumbles, can have a very prolific bull rush move, but he definitely needs to work on his other pass rushing moves. His technique isn't all there yet, but this is definitely something where, you know, Dean Pease and the defensive coaches, you know, they'll be working with him throughout training camp. They'll be working with him throughout the early stages of his career at developing those pass rush traits. Don't think he's someone who is going to really start anytime soon. He's someone who's going to come in as a rotational type piece. And, right. you know, it helps that he's so versatile and can play in so many different schemes, because that'll help him get on the field more. But hope all I'll say is hopefully he'll have more success learning secondary moves than Vic Beasley did in his time at Atlanta.
Oh man, you just had to do a Vic Beasley name drop on the podcast.
I got a name for you real quick, and I like to dig in coach's history. And when Dean Pease was in Baltimore, he had a player that I think has some similarity to Ogundeje, Chris Canty. The 3-4 defensive end, 6'7", a little north of 300, maybe, I think he was around 315, but he was also known as kind of sort of like a run-stuffing 3-4 defensive end edge type guy. Not really known for his pass rushing ability, but he saw the field a lot because of his ability to hold, to anchor as a defensive end. I think that's a ceiling for Ogundeje going forward.
It would be a pretty good ceiling for a mid-fifth rounder. A very late fifth rounder. I think that was a comp pick.
Yeah. Canty was a fourth.
Yeah. So, and again, that is Adetho Kumbo. Oh,
and speaking of Vic Beasley, we actually drafted him with that comp pick that we got for Vic Beasley.
Oh, how about that? The comparison is a direct one. He is literally the replacement.
Shout out to the Titans for paying Beasley all that money.
How many more times do we have to talk about this guy, man?
Let's
just leaves a bad
I will
taste
never
in my mouth.
Stop.
All right, we're going to move on to the last fifth round pick. Eric, I want to ask you about this guy because he's getting a little bit of attention. And I think maybe for something that fans don't always think about in the special teams, but out of Boise State, cornerback Avery Williams. And he is someone that I think Arthur Smith seemed pretty excited about how he could be used, not just on defense, not just on special teams. He actually intimated that this guy could potentially see the field on offense. So what are your thoughts on Avery Williams and his potential future with the Falcons?
Fast.
Fast.
Fast. Fast. You get him on the edge. If he has open field, it's a house call. 9 special teams touchdowns over his career. And that includes not only kick returns, not only punt returns, but also includes a block punt return for a touchdown. So at the very least, you're getting a possible special teams ace, which, you know, at the end of the fifth round, come on, guys, really? You're getting a guy that could possibly make the Pro Bowl or make the Pro Bowl as a special teamer. The guy, I'm waiting to see what pops off on film as a DB. I haven't really seen a whole lot. But again, from the aspect of special teams, this is a really, really good pick. And again, we talked about this on our show on day 3. This is where you can really appreciate Fontenot, the front office, and his coaching staff, because getting a guy like Cordero Patterson, getting a guy like Avery Williams, they're obviously placing an emphasis on special teams this year.
Right.
They're obviously placing an emphasis on return yards, which are really – those are hidden yards in a box score. No one checks a box score to see, man, how many return yards did this guy have again? No one cares unless he takes it back for a test now. But when you had an offense that was one of the worst in the league and started position last year, that's where Patterson and Williams comes into play. So now when you got a play caller like Arthur Smith, you don't have to you may not have to worry about – watching Matt Ryan take the ball from the 20 over and over and over again. Now you get to put this lethal offense on the field, and they may be starting at midfield, which is always, always a pleasantry for the offense when they take the field. They love to start at the 50. Hell yeah, we can score from there. Let's do it. But again, that aspect alone, I think that's where Avery Williams is going to come in, and he's going to be it's going to be an asset for them going forward. Just keep an eye on it going forward. I think the special teams is really getting a boost this offseason, thanks to Patterson and thanks to the drafting of Avery.
And going from Brandon Powell to Williams, right. Otherworldly.
You're not just putting a guy back there that just says, "Hey man, just catch the ball, please. I don't care if it's at the two." No, you don't want him to catch the ball at the two. Those days of Eric Weems are gone because they have they haven't had a real threat at returner since Hester.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now they have two.
And those days with Eric Weems, we were still starting from the one plenty of times.
Exactly. Yeah, this is going to be fun. And I think, Eric, to your points at the top of the podcast, they're getting a lot of guys with that athleticism, with the ability to become more. And it'll be interesting to see how he develops. Obviously, fifth round pick. There's no guarantee that this guy's going to turn into anything. But at least you like what you see in the measurables. You like what you see that he can contribute on special teams. To be blunt, the Falcons really found one a couple years ago in the sixth round with a special teams guy that they drafted in Russell Gage. So let's hope that Williams turns out similarly. All right. Last pick in the sixth round. Incidentally, these last three picks all happened 182, 183, 187. Because the two fifth round picks were comp picks. And then the sixth round pick was the Falcons' remaining pick from the top of the sixth round. So they,
I know all too well, DW. I was writing these picks up and I made a joke that I did more writing in those 5 minutes than I did in the last month.
Oh, I have no doubt, man, in which you did a fantastic job for the site. With pick 187 in round six out of Arizona State, the Falcons took wide receiver Frank Darby. So, Adnan, tell us what you know about him and what the Falcons fans should look forward to in 2021.
Well, this is the pick where I remember on the live show, this was the one where Eric's eyes just lit up when it was announced that Frank Darby was selected. Big, big play threat. He's averaged 19.9 yards per catch last year, 20 yards per catch the year before. And that's really interesting because he doesn't have that blazing fast speed that you would think someone who's averaging so many yards per reception would be known for. Like, he doesn't have an Avery Williams type speed, but he is someone who is very savvy. He's someone who will compete for those 50-50 balls. He has some drop issues. So, he'll definitely need to clean that up. He'll need to work with some of those receiving coaches. I'd like for the Falcons to bring in Tony Gonzalez to maybe work with him on using his hands to catch the ball. In the scouting report, it says that he tries to catch with his body a lot. So definitely bringing in someone like a Roddy White, Tony Gonzalez, for some mentorship when it comes to that. Eccentric personality, he's gonna be a go-to for interviews. Give some nice sound bites, but definitely someone where I remember, and I quoted Eric in the article writing up the pick. Eric said that he could possibly give Russell Gage a run for his money as the team's number three wide receiver moving forward.
Wow. All right, well, we'll have to see how that plays out. And honestly, under Arthur Smith, wide receiver three is not a premium position like it would be in other offenses. Actually, in 2020, Arthur Smith's offense, the number four most targeted player was their second tight end. So you had the two receivers.
Anthony Firkser.
That's right. And the two tight ends. So those were your four biggest targets. The third wide receiver on the roster just didn't register that much. But again, we'll see how that plays out here in Atlanta. Things could be different set of talent. I'm sure Arthur Smith will try to take advantage of what he can.
Can I add something real quick?
Absolutely.
I really want the fans to understand, like, I was really excited about this pick.
Yeah.
This is probably the one day three pick where I was really hyped about. 28 games played in his collegiate career. He had 9 games of at least 3 catches with 16 yards per catch.
Ooh.
With those receptions. His in 2019, I'm looking at it right now. 1, 2, 3, 4. He had four of his last five games. He had at least 18 yards per reception in those games. When I say big play threat, like that's what I mean. Big. That's all he's known for. He's a one trick pony right now. But in this offense, where everybody's so concentrated on Julio and Pitts and Ridley, you got a guy that can really take it. He can really stress the defense. And I honestly feel going for it. He doesn't have the speed. He's not the greatest route runner in the world. But what he does, he stresses the defenses. He makes the best of his catches. And he wins a fair share of one-on-one balls for a guy that's only 6 feet and roughly 200 pounds. He can go get those 50-50 balls. I'm excited about this one. I really do think Russell Gage needs to watch his back as well.
Wow. Very interesting. Okay. And that is the Falcons draft class. So just one thing I want to point out. Dave had written an article asking our readers to give their feedback on what they thought of this draft class. 49% gave it a B. 31% gave it an A, which means 80% of our readers felt like this was a good draft class. So with that, Eric, I'm going to ask you what you think about this draft class in comparison to our readers.
I'll say a B.
Okay.
I'll say a B.
You're right there with them.
Yeah. Was it Dane Brugler that had it as a top 10 overall class?
Yep.
Had a 10th overall. I think there was, I can't think of the name from Draft Network, but they also gave it an A+. Trevor Sikkema thought really highly of this class. I think he gave him an A as well. I would say a B. And the reason why I would say a B overall is because, yes, this is a more athletic Falcons team right now because of this draft class. But at those particular positions, I thought that there were better prospects at those particular positions. I do like what Dahlman brings to the plate, but I do think there were a couple better center prospects on the board better than Dahlman. Same with Mayfield. I like what Mayfield can do, gave a great value at 68, but there was a couple guys on the board that I would have targeted that were probably more natural fits at left guard than Jalen Mayfield. So, again, I'm not going to knock him for that. Kyle Pitts, home run pick. Richie Grant, playmaker. I love Frank Darby. I think fans are going to love Frank Darby in a year. And I think he's going to be one of those hidden gems on a team like this. Darren Hall, playmaker. Love it. Also, I do kind of sort of wish they would address edge a little earlier.
Yeah. Yep.
They didn't take one until late in the fifth round. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's always next year's draft. So.
Right. It's a good edge class.
Yeah, hopefully. Adnan, your thoughts on this draft class as we wrap up this podcast?
Well, we got 9 starters, so, you know, I can't give it anything below an A. But no, I'll also go with the B. You know, it's very good first 2 days. I like the picks on day 3 as well. It's just, we may not get as much contribution as you'd like to see from a team that's, you know, clearly going into a win now mode. Probably won't be as much day one contribution as we would have liked to see, just because you know that Arthur Smith was pounding the table for Kyle Pitts. And I'm pretty sure that Arthur Smith said, I can get this team to the playoffs if you give me Kyle Pitts with this pick. Hmm. So because of that draft pick, I'm expecting nothing less than at least a wild card appearance this year. I think anything short of that would be a failure, you know, not to mince words. But
no pressure.
No pressure, but, you know, a little bit of pressure. One thing that I really enjoyed seeing was they came in with a plan and they stuck to it. They went with these very athletic guys. They went with playmakers. And, you know, that was the prevailing theme of this draft class. They went in looking to rebuild the offense, looking to rebuild the trenches. And it's something that both Arthur Smith and Terry Fontenot talked about leading up to the draft. You know, the trenches are incredibly important, and they spent what, 3-4 picks on the trench, 4 picks
Four
within the
picks.
Trenches.
Yep.
Yeah. And you know, they went BPA, like they said they would. Kyle Pitts was the best player available. I think Jalen Mayfield was their BPA in round 3. So, you know, it's definitely something that I'm looking forward to looking at and cross-referencing in future years when it comes to how important will those trenches be, how important will that RAS be, and how important will it be to get guys who are just who are bona fide playmakers at the college game.
Yeah. Yep. And this is going to be interesting. This is the first draft for Fontenot. One thing I do want to address as a final point about this draft class, a lot of people thought the Falcons were definitely going to grab a running back in at least day 3. And it didn't happen. And Fontenot actually said in their press conference that their board just didn't play out that way. So instead of reaching for a running back that maybe was lower graded on their board, they just went with the best players they had. And that meant that they did not draft a single running back. That was after letting Ito Smith go. They did get some guys in free agency. I don't want to talk about that on this podcast. We'll address that in the future. But I do think, to your point, Adnan, they stuck to their guns. And in some cases, that meant that positions where they really, you know, arguably needed to address it, didn't get addressed in the draft because that is not their philosophy. They do not draft for need. They're drafting best available. And I think we saw that. So kudos to them for sticking to it. Hopefully this will remain the case because, you know, to be blunt, we had 13 years of watching a GM draft for need, and we saw what that landed us over time. And I think that's, you know, when you get it right with guys like Julio Jones and Matt Ryan, you end up with potential, you know, Hall of Famers. When you get it wrong, you end up with guys that, you know, burn out on the roster like Pete Kahns and just don't end up turning into anything in the NFL. So
Des Southward
and Desmond Southward, right. And Lamar Holmes and oh my God, this list could go on and on.
I think we could go on for another hour. We could go on for another hour if this is the exercise.
Yeah, we're going to have a podcast just on who is the worst draft pick of the Dimitroff era.
Oh, man, that's going to be a long one.
Yeah, that would be like 4 hours. All right. So with that, guys, I appreciate you both joining me. Enjoyed talking about this draft class. We're obviously going to cover it more at thefalcoholic.com. So, Eric, I'll start with you. Remind our listeners where they can find you, what you have going on.
You can find me on Twitter at @_Eric_Robinson. Right now, I am working on a Frank Darby scouting report. I'll have that done over the next day or two. And after that, on the slate, I'm working on a film review of Richie Grant. And I'm going to have some fun with that one. I'm going to really enjoy that one. In the meantime, hop on to falcoholic.com. Check out my scouting report on Richie Grant. Check out everything on the Falcoholic site, man. We cover all the bases. And I want to tip my cap to the entire staff at the Falcoholic this past draft weekend. We killed it. Site reviews went up.
Yes.
Followers on Twitter went up. We really covered all the bases. We dot all the I's, crossed all the T's in this draft. And I think we did a hell of a job. And I'm proud to be part of a team like this.
100%. Agree with that completely. Adnan, remind our listeners where they can find you, what you've got going on.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @SayWhichWay, and definitely check out the Falcoholic overall. You know, I'm always very impressed by, you know, the entire team when it comes to draft weekend. It's like a completely well-oiled machine just throughout the entire weekend. It's a full marathon, and everyone just does such a great job with it. And, you know, I think the proof is in the pudding, and the results are showing with the site traffic going up so much. I think people are really enjoying what we do, and you know, we do it for the people. If the people weren't there, then we wouldn't be doing it. Yeah, I have a pretty fun Dead Zone article series coming up pretty soon, which will start going pretty soon. So, you know, be on the lookout for that.
I'm also glad they finally allowed us to eat after 3 days.
No, it was we were down to skin and bones.
Yeah, we were.
It was getting pretty dire over in the Falcoholic dungeon.
Yeah, he finally unchained me from the radiator at the end of the day three show, but not before seeing for sure whether or not we were gonna have a seventh round pick.
Yeah, I do have to let you know, Gina was pounding the table for you to be unchained from the radiator, so she was on your side on that. The rest of us, less so. All right, guys, as for me, you can find me on Twitter at FalcoholicDW, updates for this podcast at FalcoholicPod, and as the guys mentioned already, our articles daily at TheFalcoholic.com. So for Adnan Ekic and Eric Robinson, this is David Walker. Thank you guys for listening in. We'll talk with you next time.